that much in terms of the tax savings they get from this. So I don't think it's really a great remedy itself. Maybe it's a recognition of the issue, but in terms of really paying somebody back for any lost value, I don't think it hardly puts a dent in it, because, I mean, in this case, you can see that they've got $30,000 of value impact, and the tax savings at, say, $12 per thousand for 5 years, you can see that that doesn't get too close to the $30,000 impact.
Mr. Chair, would any of this happen during periodic review when they've discovered some critter and so the county or city says this is a natural area now and you can't build on it, or a view shed, and zones it accordingly?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, I think those would be the kind of cases where you have a situation where there is a kind of a resource issue, that natural resource issue, for example, or maybe a situation where there's a somebody wants to preserve a particular piece of land because of its unusual natural situation for a park or something. I mean, it's typically not, you know, something a district, in my experience, does without some really unusual reason. I'm not really all that much involved in planning, but based on what I see, that would be the kind of situation.
Yeah, I have right now some, we have something spotted butterflies out on Clatsop Plains, and there aren't very many of them left. And people have purchased parcels to build on, and now the federal government's saying, wait a minute, and they're negotiating with the planning department of the county to see where it ends up and who gets to build and who doesn't get to build. I'm assuming that sort of thing would fit in there too, as well as, I mean, when we did our comprehensive plan in Clatsop, my property went from 2.5 acre parcels to 5 acre parcels, so I effectively could no longer divide my property. I think there's any of a number of things mm-hmm. that could happen is in the course of doing business, but I sort of figured that, you know, but my property taxes went down as a result of that, but if your taxes did, that still treated you like everybody else?
Senator Baker, Senator Dukes, that's really true. In terms of property taxes, we definitely, if we hadn't anticipated a higher use than the zoning ended up being, we definitely lowered. And there are other avenues these days I think people are taking for downzoning situations and reverse condemnation and all that stuff. I think this is still possible, as these situations are possibly going to come up, but it's just not the same situation as when we went through the major change in Oregon back in the 70s.
And if this isn't really compensation and they go to court, we still lose, or whoever's involved in it still loses, mm-hmm. and this didn't save anybody.
So, what's your preference?
It's not needed.
Yeah,
I don't think it's needed either.
Jerry's feeling that way. I don't have any.
Yeah, I just as soon eliminate the section and repeal the statute and move on. They've got other problems out there bigger than this, if they've got those kind of view shed issues or ecological issues.
If the very problem comes, we can review it when we reconsider it, when it...
We can put it into Senate Bill 600 with takings again. Rent it out again.
Senator Bacon, one thought. You could ask the Department of Revenue to look at our report we do annually on the amount of properties under the program.
Why don't you do that? Jim, Jerry's going to just double-check with the Department of Revenue regarding potential elimination of the statute 308.341 on the downzone. It seems like an anachronism, but we'll double-check. let's bring that back probably tomorrow and take a look at it and see if we need to, any reason we need to hang on to it.
Well, this did, oh, I'm sorry.
I wonder if people even know. I mean, you have to apply for this, right?
That's correct.
So, seems to me there's probably a lot of people who don't know that you can apply for it that aren't getting covered anyway.
Well, Senator Dix, actually, the initial catalyst in this is the planning department. They're supposed to notify the assessor, and the assessor's supposed to notify the owner, and then the owner can apply for the program. Now, quite honestly, I'm not sure that the planning departments, are, all of them are aware of that requirement. Because, again, these situations come up so rarely.
After we reduce their numbers as a result of 47 and 50, might be even a little tougher.
Yeah, I guess, Mr. Chair, it would be appropriate for me to ask, who knows the status of Mrs. Baker now, or if she's from Milwaukee?
One of your constituents
Mrs.
probably
Baker,
out there.
Yeah, I don't want to hurt Mrs. Baker.
No relation here.
Sneaking suspicion Mrs. Baker got taken care of.
Good. Jim?
When we discussed this in the work group, that was a question we had, was whether anybody...
Where Mrs. Baker was?
No, not Mrs. Baker, but whether there was anybody on this, and they can check again. Here, the tax expenditure report wasn't aware of anyone at the time they did this report. And that was the answer we got back in the work group, was that nobody was aware of anyone, but I don't think anybody did a county-by-county survey.
Well, I don't need to do a survey. Let's just get a general impression and move on to something else.
I'll check with my cousin, see if he knows about Mrs. Baker.
Vern's related to everybody in Clackamas County, sooner or later. Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, the last one that we have here is this single-family property, single-family house in a higher use zone. Which is in, let's see, it's in section 215 of the bill.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
What this does is it says that if you're a single family residence and you've been included in a higher density, I guess, or a higher value zone, a multiple family commercial industrial zone, you can apply to have your property assessed as though it were in a residential zone. So presumably it would carry a lower land value if it were valued as a residential property as opposed to the what a commercial land would be worth. The qualifications are listed there. It must be your personal residence for the preceding 5 years, continue to be the owner's residence and not used for another purpose. And there are some people on this now, estimated value now on it at $3.3 million in 95. And I know Jerry has some in his county. The interesting thing about this is that what it really does is it gets your property valued as a residential property. Well, under Measure 50, what would happen is if say you're in a residential zone now, or you were back in 95, 96, and you were valued as a residence, and then somehow it was upzoned to where it was a higher value zone, that under Measure 50, you would still be in effect appraised as a residential property anyway, because you would carry your 95.6 value less 10%, plus then 3% a year. And even if you did some new construction on the property that was residential, you would use the residential ratio to value that improvement. So in effect, the Measure 50 almost does this anyway for anybody that gets moved from that is currently in a, or that by 95, 96 it was valued as residential property. Their value isn't going to go up because they've been upzoned until they change the use of the property, because that's the way Measure 50 works. There is an addition to value under Measure 50 for upzoning, but only when you change the use of the property itself. So Measure 50 is almost doing that. The one exception would be the way this program works is you could go down and apply now for this if you were, even though the upzoning occurred a number of years ago, if you're in a commercial zone now, you could still go down and apply for this treatment.
If Measure 50 effectively produces the same effect,
right,
why do we need the statute?
Right. Well, I think that's a good, that's sort of the policy issue that's before you, that for anybody where this would occur now, where they would go out and upzone property, Measure 50 would really almost achieve this, would achieve this effect anyway.
Everybody is locked in, yeah.
And there is provisions in the current law for penalties if you become disqualified and a rollback in taxes. And so, whereas there wouldn't be under Measure 50 the way it works. That looks like Jerry has some.
Jerry's creeping down. Jerry, why don't you help us with this one?
Jerry Hansen, Washington County. Chair Baker, I think Jim's covered it very well. And I would just add to one thing to that, and that is the people that are currently under the program do have penalties sitting there. They up to 5 years of back taxes would be due if they sell the property or move out of the property. If they sell the property and the next owner continues to live there, then they would continue with that liability. So I think it might be something to consider in terms of sort of phasing out of those penalties over, say, 5 years for those current occupants that have this. I guess you could use the word back taxes.
I mean, what causes the penalties to click in? What does the owner of the property do?
If they change the use or sell it and the next owner changes the use to other than residential.
So it's residential in a commercial zone. They sell it to someone for commercial and then they, doesn't that sort of defeat the city or county's efforts to maintain a commercial zone? I mean, we're allowing that, yeah, there's this anomaly that's been going on and we're going to continue it. I mean, I guess I understand they're going to make more money if they sell it for commercial. But on the other hand...
But who does the penalty go to?
The
penalty is whoever ends up changing the use of the property.
But they pay it to who?
They pay it back to the county who disperses the money.
But the county, though, if the property is upgraded from resident to commercial, then the county then, at that rate, puts a commercial rate of the property and increases more taxes on the property.
Senator Baker, that's true now.
It's residential.
but the county would like to see it commercial because they have more taxes off the property in a commercial zone.
Mr. Chair, actually, that's one of the new realities of Measure 50 under a levy system. It didn't generate any. It wasn't a matter of revenue. It was a matter of, shifting taxes. So, but under Measure 50, of course, the higher value would generate more revenue. But the law was designed to allow people just to continue to live in their house in a situation where, it really emanates from the comprehensive planning that was done. And those comprehensive plans may have included residential areas. And, 20 years in the future, they were designed to be sort of converted over as the market would dictate. Mm-hmm. And so this was designed to allow people to continue living there without being, quote, taxed out of their houses based on the market values going up to commercial prices. And so, it was sort of a way to allow the zoning policies not to clash with the taxing policies. And as Jim points out, that's pretty much taken care of in Measure 50 now.
But if we're only looking at, on this expenditure report, 95 values are $3.3 million, I presume statewide, with the limitation of 1.5%, you're only looking at, $50,000 loss of revenue? That's a revenue on a yearly basis. If you eliminate it, it really doesn't cause a lot of problems out there statewide. And unless there's some other policy reasons here that are floating around. Jim?
Well, I would say if you eliminated it, it wouldn't really do anything because anybody that's currently on the program, if they had a 95.6 value that either was under this program or reflected the residential value at the time, they would be rolled back to that 10% less plus 3% anyway.
Right, yeah.
And so it wouldn't, repealing that wouldn't really affect anybody anyway. It wouldn't throw value back on the roll because of the way Measure 50 works.
Yes, I just like to make sure it doesn't. I can think of one place in particular in my district that's got one of those issues. It would have been a creeping commercial thing, and this one family, they tried to buy them out and tried, and it's their home. They want to die there. It's what they want. The penalties don't make a lot of sense to me. I understand a little bit of it, but anybody who decided to go commercial at the time the rest of the area did, sold their residential property as commercial and made their money, and there was no penalties. So now you just, but the people who decided to continue living in it and finish out their years when they decide to go into a retirement home or whatever, they get penalized. And that seems inequitable to me.
Yeah, it seems to me that if we eliminate the program effectively, we haven't affected anything here. Measure 50 kind of supersedes the result here. We're limiting the penalties, and if someone wants to hang it properly, they can. If they want to sell it, they can. It doesn't really affect that. They have the lack of penalties, so they are maybe freer to make the decisions they would like to make.
Okay. As long as we're sure nobody.
Yeah, Senator Baker, I can't disagree with that. I can only, you know, unfortunately, assessors are always thinking about equity, you know, and how, you know, it goes back to.
Of course, you're talking to
childhood days where you're comparing what your brother got, you know, at the dinner table or something. But, you know, we've probably had people that have just paid off this penalty 3 weeks ago or something. I don't know. But in any case, you know, that's the only thought I can think about.
Some people just got their historical valuation also for the 95 basis, just happened to hit the magic number on that, too. And that's. That's life. Jim, why don't you look at drafting something to repeal that? Is that a general consensus to go ahead and just get rid of this anomaly? Yeah. Thank you, Jerry. Okay, Jim.
Okay, that, if you had on the outline, I think we've gone through the entire bill except for the issues that, or the issues in the entire bill, except for those that aren't in the bill at all. And there were a couple of those listed.
You're looking at your information or your
on that outline.
Your outline.
Going back to that original outline. And right. And if you go to the very back of it, there are some things that are listed there at the end. And one of them is the county trust forest land distribution. And I have passed out just a copy of the statute. It just looks like this.
Like all the statutes. So.
All right. Like all the statutes. It's 530.115.
Is this what we're working on?
Yes.
Oh,
no. Okay. And we worked basically through all the issues on that sheet except for those that are listed as not in the bill. And if you look at that statute, the county trust forest lands, this is the same issue you were just recently, or the same distribution you were just talking about in the school fund formula for the Northwest ESD.
Mm-hmm.
This is the copy of the statute. And what the statute says is that the distribution that comes off these county trust forest lands that are managed by the the Department of Forestry is that the county takes 10% off the top. Or a higher percentage if it feels that that's needed, if there are costs that are incurred in maintenance and supervision exceed 10%. That's paragraph A of subsection 1 there. Right, it's not less than 10%, so they get at least the 10%, could be more. Then 25%, and then you take whatever's left, and 25% goes into the county school fund. And the remainder is prorated in a portion to the districts. in the county. And the proration is done as laid out in subsection C, and it says, in the proportion that the rate of tax levy in each district, as shown by the tax levy filed with the assessor for the last year in process of collection, bears to the total rate of tax levy of all such taxing bodies for such year. Well, the rates that have been used for that distribution generally are the pre-compression rates since Measure 5 passed. And those are the rates, say, for a school district might be as high as $15 or $12 or whatever before compression.
We're just starting on.
And so in this distribution, schools have gotten a fairly big share of the funds. And state, and these funds are then offset in the state school. They're considered local revenue under the state school fund formula. So essentially they end up in the pool for distribution through the state school fund. And that is running at about, well, $10 million. I think we're using $22 million in the biennium, this next biennium, or in the budget in the state school fund from this source as local revenue in the state school fund.
Jim, why are they using pre-compression rates? There's nothing in the statute that says.
Well, I think this rate, that's the only rate that a district has. The post-compression rates are different in every code area. And that's what they've been using.
Because it's a district
rate. Right, it's a district rate.
Okay.
In any event, the district rates that are going to be used now are going to be the Measure 50 rates, if you just go with the statute the way it is. And that's going to reduce the revenue, we figure, by about a half of the revenues coming into the state.
So this will force them to the post-compression rates.
Right, in effect. Now, I've got a big data set that I still haven't got fully punched in to figure out more closely what the numbers are. But the pre-compression, the rates are going down to about half of what they were. So we're just roughly estimating we lose about $10 million in the state school fund for the biennium from this. And I'll get some better numbers on this, but
just a second. Where does the money go?
The other taxes.
In effect, it when it would go to the county and the mainly to the county and to the fire districts. I mean mainly to the county.
Mean if we do nothing currently?
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's the same thing we had over the Northwest ESD because they had we created a reduced tax rate for them, and that money automatically went to the other, well, mostly the county, but the other tax districts. This would do it for the schools as well.
So we lose about $10 million biennium from the local resources to the county, to the state school fund.
Right, and I'm a little confused about the lags that are in here and what years you use to get a better number on this, but that's, I think, the long-term effect of it. The other...
County school fund polls by comparison.
So, Jim, what are the options then?
Well, I think either leaving it the way it is and absorbing a loss, whatever it turns out to be, or adjusting the formula.
And going to court? I would assume the counties would file suit over that. Oh, they're not sure. It's $10 million.
Well, $10 million goes for you? Again? To the county?
Well,
fire districts,
library districts, sewer districts, whatever you got, county.
Originally, it went to the county schools. Right.
But the counties have the biggest tax rate of all those groups, right. So most of it goes to them.
With Measure 5, it ended up going to, local revenues and essentially going to the state.
Or we could just make it not a local revenue, let the schools keep it.
Well, everybody has a bill.
Never filed it.
Gil, why don't you give us the county's view?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. The formula, you're really talking about the third step of the formula. The formula, the initial share, about one-third stays with the state, two-thirds comes into a pot. And it, unlike the ONC sharing and the National Forest sharing, it, the money goes back to where the very, the tree was cut. So it's very localized. The first share, 10% off the top, goes to the county. The next, of the remainder, 25% goes to the county school fund. What you're talking about is the last sharing of the of the of the remainder. So the schools have had a lion's share of this since that deep cut that the county school fund took, and I think it was in 1975 or something when that happened, and the county signed off on that.
Okay, just a second. I'm just looking at the statute. So the first 10% would go to the county general fund, same as it is now. Next 25% would go to the county school fund we talked about the last couple of days, and that then would be dispersed as it's traditionally been dispersed.
That's right.
Okay, so we're talking about the remaining, what, 65%?
Well, let's see, you've got 100%, two-thirds come locally, 10% of that, then 25% of the remainder, so it's some 45% of a, I imagine you're talking about 55% or something of the local share, 55-65% of the local share.
75 or 90.
Is what?
Well, it's 75% of 90%.
But then I, you're I also, would.
There's the state. You're also making a percent of what the state gets.
I would not recommend that you try to make heads or tails out of that statute. That is one of the most cumbersome statutes, and the reason is it's been amended very carefully over the years, and therefore awkwardly.
Well, it looks like it's been amended in 69, 73, 77. Had a good deal of interest shown on it.
In terms of the county's position, I need to confer with the board that directs me on this, the Council of Forest Trustland Counties. They're now they're talking about it. We have Gail Achterman, who's the counsel for the council, legal counsel, is exploring the footing that the county has with respect to this agreement with the state.
Yep. As they say, the other option is to do something temporary to make it, to get through this biennium, and then I know this is a complex issue and has been in the past.
Well, it certainly deserves a lot more attention than what we're able to get to it here.
And so to do, and part of that is working out the lags in, you know, what year is used when,
do we have
and
the
seeing
option,
how far that really carries you.
Do we have the option to do nothing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We could just let it for somebody else to worry about later.
But the impact of the general fund, this is about 10 million.
Well, there'll be some impact.
Well, actually, not necessarily the general fund. Again, if we don't make up the money, it's just a hit to the state school fund.
That's a hit to the state school fund.
Mr. Chairman, you may have heard there was some informal discussion about changing this formula to the benefit of state parks. I don't know if any of you were involved in that discussion, but that also would it was taking place among leadership, and then the decision I think was made to study that in the interim. It was a bit large of a leap for this late in the session. This is I need to tell you this is a very tender topic. These were county lands, and the counties, you know, have been very generous about sharing with schools, and now they've seen all the attention to schools and very little attention Human Services and Public Safety, and so there's concern about this. I need to put that on the record.
Give us some kind of an idea by tomorrow morning. You can pull,
yes, I will.
You can pull the board.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukeson.
I know where the board's been in the past years on this sort of thing, but this is an unanticipated transfer of money to the counties. Granted, these are the county's lands, and all this money is in lieu of property taxes they would have received if they'd kept the properties and sold them. But, I mean, this is unanticipated if we leave it the way it is. We might talk with them. It's different than having to retrieve money that you already have.
Also could create a $10 million hole statewide, although that's spread across 560,000 kids. It's still, you know, a few cents ahead or whatever it comes to be.
Mr. Chairman, I can tell you the county commissioners in this region are very concerned about schools, and it's reflected in the current formula. But there's, it's chafing on them to hear you're on your own. And, okay, so we're on our own, so leave our formula alone. I think that's a lot.
Are there objections to the dash 9? Okay, we'll adopt that into the bill. And then what about the prepayment issue? Is that a huge policy issue for us if we can anticipate, or... I mean, there's actually a limitation now, so that you cannot prepay.
Senator Baker, yes. Currently, the tax collector cannot accept any payment if there is not a tax roll out there.
Yeah, there is the one. Isn't there the one provision for some kinds of property, like mobile homes and stuff like that? But that's a special case. There are some special cases where they can. I remember.
Yes, Senator Baker, there would be an exception when, if property was moving, if you had a mobile home that was going to be moving, yeah. Those taxes would be pre-collected since yeah. They would not have the, you know, ability to have property that could be attached if it was gone. So in those cases, or if there is a partition or subdivision of land, those type of things, they pre-collect on those ahead of time. But those are the ones that probably are at risk for collection are the only time that they can pre-collect.
Is there interest in the committee to eliminate the prepayment barrier mm-hmm. right now?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, why don't you draft something, we'll take a look at it, and maybe run it out there. That's not the high priority on 1215, obviously, but...
Is that right?
They used to go south. He was in Washington.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
Jim, can you kind of recap where we're at?
Well, what we've done is essentially gone through everything in the bill, plus other issues that were on that outline.
Okay.
And now we do have some, we have up to at least dash 9 in amendments back that you've asked for from council. And so we could start going through those and revisit some of the issues you've kind of put to come back to.
Okay. Jerry, do you have something to...
Mr. Chair, I don't know what we'd do with the money. And I don't know how we'd keep track of it if somebody prepays it before we have an account to put it onto.
You can't have another.
But you have, if you have an existing account, property doesn't disappear.
We don't. We don't have an existing account. That's the problem.
You can't set up a second unsegregated tax fund?
Well, you have an account because people, if they don't pay their taxes, you only have an account that goes forward, doesn't go back. I mean, it only goes back, doesn't go forward.
Well, we don't have an account in our computer that we can actually...
And your software doesn't allow you to...
Yeah. Every year is a totally separate transaction. Until we have an account there, we do not have the basis for a new transaction in the new year. We could put the money in a bag and keep records separately and then go back. But I mean, that's...
That's embarrassing.
I don't think it's a good idea. I would... hesitate to.
Would it be possible to reprogram the program?
You know, for the benefit of the public?
We're being told that they don't want the money.
Yeah. Good
idea. I mean, give go explain this to all these cities and counties and little districts that have got to go to the bank and borrow money to cover the late month that we're not collecting taxes.
Mr. Chair, first of all, I don't think there's going to be a huge demand, but the problem is when we get the money, we're going to have to set up a separate set of books to keep track of it. That means setting up a whole new supplemental role, I think. I'm not an expert on the collection side, but I just can envision some interesting problems.
Can't you set up sort of a blank thing for every tax account that you've got? And then when John Doe comes in and makes his prepayment, credit that tax account with his prepayment. So that when you do send out the statements, then it subtracts that amount.
Senator Baker, Senator Dukes, unfortunately, all the accounts are not the same from year to year, and we don't know which ones have changed until we get, I mean, we have name changes happening till the last second every year, and we have property.
You have tax code numbers, and they're going to pay on that tax code number.
The, Senator Baker, the accounts, many of them are the same from year to year, but we don't have a way to anticipate which ones will be, and until we've got our roles established, we have to have some way to keep track of the money, and until we have turned the rollover, there's nothing there. All the name changes, all the lot line adjustments, all the subdivisions are happening, and when we turn the roll, we have all that stuff in place, but until that time, there is no accounting mechanism that
I'm aware of. Mr. Chair, do you think that it's possible that if we were to pass that amendment that the counties would figure out that problem somehow?
Mr. Chair, we could figure it out, but I can tell you this. It would take a lot of extra time that we don't have to begin with to do it. I would rather have some collections experts talk to you, but I'm just telling you what I know is it would be very difficult.
We don't have to do it. It just seems like an anomaly in the law that you can't show a credit on your accounting system.
It does, and I've seen the lines in the Clatsop County Courthouse when after the tax statements go out, sort of like a day or two before the deadline. It seems to me if we're moving the deadline forward, but you're running into the end of the year for people who need to be able to pay the taxes before the end of the year, you're going to cause more problems for your own staff or the tax collector's staff if we don't allow this.
Senator Baker, I guess I would advise you that I can't tell you all the potential problems, but I know that it's not a very easy situation to deal with, and I'd rather have.
We don't have to address it in 12-15, Senate Bill 12-15, but you got your own problems out there with other issues going on right now. I think it should be addressed at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was wondering about the Dash 2 amendments.
That's the Gresham Alliance?
Yep.
Jim just got a call to go over to the House side.
I think he brought those with him.
Yeah, they're here.
Yep.
I think he's got them there.
The Dash 2?
Dash 2s.
I don't have any.
I've got the 9s and 3s.
No, here's 2s.
Got one.
Yes.
He's got one there.
I mean, the mayor's been calling, and I'm assuming so. Well, actually, when they voted on 47 and it passed, it did what this accomplished.
Randy, is this Gresham only, not Hillsborough?
Yeah, right.
This doesn't change how much the people pay just where the money goes, right?
Well, Jim, why don't you explain the Gresham situation again and then the proposed solution here?
Okay, I was trying to find it in the amendments here. Preliminary.
Well, if I might, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Take a stab at it. City of Gresham had a public safety levy dedicated exclusively to fire and police. They went out for a tax base to replace that levy. That failed. Notwithstanding that failure, with the passage of 47, and the particular dates 47 identified from which you made cuts, it would have included the levy when it was in effect. But the passage of 50, moving the year up that we decided from when to make those cuts, it precluded the base that Gresham would have used under 47. So what?
Okay, but they still went back to the 95, 96 year
minus 10% as their base. So even though the levy failed, they still use that earlier base.
Right.
Which was a higher base.
Right. And that would have occurred under 47.
And it occurred under 50, didn't it?
My understanding is not, and that's the purpose of the dash twos.
No, the same thing would happen under 47 and 50. Okay, fresh. They had in 95, 96, let's say this is a simple case. Say this is the county, but this is the other district. Here's the other district. Here's the city. Tax base, whatever it is, and this is their serial levy that existed in 95, 96. They tried to, what they did was, this levy was expiring. They wanted to basically roll it into a new tax base, so they asked the voters for that, and it failed. So in effect, by the time they get to 97, 98, now here are the other districts. Including the school districts and the rest. Here is now the city, which is just with its base. So it has a lower levy, in effect, than it had in 95, 96. And what happens under Measure 47, and by extension under 50, is you take a 10% reduction from 95, 96 for each property in the district, gets that 10% reduction, and then the money is distributed from each taxpayer by a formula. And if you assume that that's a proportional distribution, what happens is that in this particular set of code areas where the city is, you have a higher base than is typical because of the serial levy that was there in 95-6 that has gone away. So the base year is relatively higher. So there's relatively smaller cuts in these code areas compared to other code areas. But what happens is that the effect of that, of those smaller cuts, end up being shared by all of the districts. They don't just go to the city. It goes to all of the districts that are in these code areas because it's a proportional allocation of the revenue. So what happens is that Gresham gets some benefit from the fact that this was higher, but they don't. But other districts get some of the benefit too. And what the amendments do is essentially say, and this is in that's where I was trying to find it in the amendments. It's the main part of it is in paragraph 2 there, or subsection 2, which is the very first part of these amendments. It says that the district, rather than sort of the entire code area, the district cannot get less than 94.5 or 95.6 less 10% plus new construction.
The individual district.
The individual district itself, as opposed to
this way, this, in other words, the city could not get less than what they had in 95.96.
Right, so it takes this entire levy, including the serial levy, and it can't get less than 90. That's, I think the one that actually operates is the 95.6 less 10%, that's the one that, actually it says the lesser of, so it can't do worse than, is what I should say, than 95.6 less 10% on this levy. So in effect, they get all of the, they would be guaranteed that they would at least get their levy back then, less 10%, plus whatever
as a base.
Occurs. Plus the benefit of any new construction.
So they get their levy back even though it failed by the voters.
That's what
the tax base failed, but the levy
expired.
Levy expired.
So what? That's what it's saying. That's what it's saying.
Randy, did it? Is it fail because they didn't get a 50%, or did it?
I don't know.
This was pre Measure 47. So
okay.
So I'm sorry. It didn't need a 50%.
So what they made a decision to do was go after a tax base rather than to extend their levy.
Yeah.
And they kind of rolled the dice on that, and it ended up that the tax base didn't pass. So suddenly they're without a levy. And
operating under 47 and 50.
Yeah,
right.
Just,
wrong time. Cross the street in front of the bus and
yep.
Didn't look.
And the implication is devastating to the city. It's like $2.3 million out of the fire and police budget in a fairly small community.
Well, I understand that, but that's the measure, that's the effective measure 47.
Well, you know, and I understand Jim's yeah. explanation, but the way it's been explained to me by the people in Gresham is that they would have fared better under 47.
I don't think so.
Well, that's not what our what our runs show, and I haven't seen numbers that would say that, unless one assumed a different distribution of the 47 allocations, mm-hmm. and that you could do under a different distribution of the 47 allocations, and I'm sure under some of those they might do better. Mm-hmm. But that's again a 47 question. What is the distribution of 47? I think whatever you decided about that, ultimately the 50, they would be better than 47 yeah. based on a consistent set of assumptions about how 47 work.
Can we continue the discussion tomorrow morning?
Sure.
I'd like to continue it, please.
Yeah.
Get a little better. Okay, we are actually
coming back at 1.
Actually, is 1 o'clock the better to continue the discussion? Let's do that
today.
Yeah, we're in recess until 1 o'clock. Work session on Senate Bill 1215. Go ahead.
Okay.
As long as there are four of us in the room, we might as well.
Yeah.
Do something efficient.
I thought we had sent the fellow that was from the railroads away to come up with some language on replacement cost on valuing utility property. I haven't seen anything on that. I can check on that. And then there was some discussion that you wanted to have about the remedies on bonding that I think okay. the bond attorney for the cities wanted to talk to you about.
Neil, you saw Randy where?
Upstairs, third floor, heading into where rules used to meet.
357?
343, probably.
343?
Where education used to meet. That's where rules meet.
Right.
Carol, would you kind of track down Senator Leonard if you could?
But rules is meeting in E in 5 minutes.
Oh, that's right.
Is it 343 in conference committee?
Well, it's a conference committee.
Well, tell him we'd like him here.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
His amendment is up?
That's yeah. the only thing we got.
That's the only reason we're here.
Other than that, the stuff we can handle tomorrow at 1. So meet tomorrow at 1 and meet on Monday at 1.
Jim? Excuse me, were you going to tell him?
Well, I was just going to say there was a couple other things. Was coming up with a particular proposal from Hillsborough. They've got, we're running some numbers for them to try to figure out which one, and also for Hefner on those proposals, those anomalies.
Was somebody going to present those in a minute?
We have to kind of decide on which way to do it, but we're going to do that today. And then
I don't think there's a good solution at Hefner.
What was the Hefner problem? I missed that one.
The Hefner problem.
Yeah,
that's every one of these is kind of an intellectual
case
of juggling.
Well, Hefner's problem is in a couple other places.
City votes a levy and the county gets all the money.
But at least in Hefner, they both showed up to fight with yeah. each other.
Yeah. Sat at the table together.
Uh-huh. The unique aspect of this is that Hefner and a couple other places do worse under 50 than under 47. So this is really a 50 problem, not a 47 problem. All the other ones you've heard are 47 issues. And what happens is that they're a very high compression area. Before, I think this is the way to do it. Didn't make the county big enough. Say we have a city here, and then you have the county. This is the county rate. And just a real simple example, this is code area 1, code area 2. Code area 1 is the city and the county. And this is outside the city, so it's just the county. And what happens in Hefner is that it's under very high compression. total rate for non-schools pre or under Measure 5, $16. It's the highest, one of the highest in the state. And what happens is, of course, under Measure 5, is compressed down to 10. And when you compress it down to 10, what happens then is the county rate within that code area is reduced down to here. And then the city gets this. Okay? So in effect, what happens...
They compress into the county share.
The county rate is here, whereas outside it's up here, and the city gets this. Well, now this is without anything happening. This is without 47 or 50. What happens under 47 is that this gets pushed down 17% or so, whatever it is. And so now you get further, in effect, compression for Measure 47, which further kicks down the county rate like this. And in effect, county gets less, the city gets less. It's all proportional. And out here in Code Area 2, the same sort of thing happens. County rate is just pushed down. What happens under 50 is that, okay, the city is here. This is it's getting this down to here. The county, in order to calculate the 50 numbers, you add this tax here to this tax here across the entire county, and then you divide that into the assessed value of the county, and then you redistribute the taxes equally back across the county. So in effect, what happens is that the county rate comes like this across here. And it turns out that in Heppner was a real bad case of this, because the value of the city of Heppner is only 3% of the whole county. Because Morrow County's got Boardman, and it's got
all those potato fields.
It's got a big utility value.
Yeah.
And so the city of Heppner doesn't have any of that. So it's only 3% of the value of the county. So when they lose this revenue here, it doesn't drive this rate down very much. And so this backwash effect drives the rate back up for the county in this code, throws them all back under compression again. Even after these 17% cuts, they're back in compression. And what happens is that the city ends up the loser on the deal. They end up with actually less money. And to compound that, the city of Heppner had passed a serial levy, a local option levy under Measure 50 or 47. And what that would have done under 47 is that they would have recaptured this entire gap, including the county share of it. But what happened was, when this county backwash comes in, it throws the whole thing in compression, and they lose the entire local option levy in addition to losing a bunch of what they would have got under 47. Mm. So they end up actually about 55,000 worse off, which is about 30% under 50 than they are under 47. So that's definitely. There's another city that's not as bad, Morrow City, which is in Sherman County. It's not quite as bad. They didn't do a local option.
So even if they do a local option, because they fall back under compression,
it doesn't do them any good. Because the local option levy is compressed first.
Jim, why don't you stay over there? All right. Further questions about Heppner?
What's the answer?
Well, the only answer is to give them somehow more authority so they can compress the county back out of the picture again. It's the only permanent answer, because...
The county objected to that, however.
You have to add more authority into the city so that they can compete better under the compression calculation. And because, that's about the only way you can do it. So we're working on how to do that. Not an easy thing, because...
Do you have a comment about Heppner?
Chairman, members of the committee, Gail Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. I got a call this morning that all the districts have met, or at least the city and the county have met, and there's a letter that they promised by 10 o'clock, I haven't seen it yet, signed by all of them, saying that they would like to work this out, and we had passed the word along in some informal discussions with Jim that there may be a way to spread this statewide, and that's what they're looking at. And I told him this morning, that may not work.
I would not be in favor of doing it straight statewide.
No.
Then we're back at the starting point, I think. I think if the issue is to beef up Heppner's levy authority as opposed to paring down already low levy authority for the county, I think that would be more agreeable to the parties. If you could somehow localize the fix in Heppner, that's something I hope you can do if you're going to do this at all.
Well, yeah, I think you have to separate two issues. You have to separate what happens to districts and what happens to taxpayers. The taxpayers in Heppner aren't going to pay any more no matter what you do because they're under compression. So you can allocate more authority to Heppner. They can compete better against the county. The county would lose that revenue. And the other, it's not just the county. There's other districts that are countywide or almost countywide. The county's like two-thirds of it or something. And so you can do that. And what that does is it effectively gives Heppner more money, shifts burden, and shifts the loss, say, out onto these other districts. Then the next question is, the only way to spread it statewide is to give the county and these other districts more authority, which means their taxpayers would pay more outside the city in order to give them more money. But in order to get a 17% statewide reduction, some other district somewhere else has to take less revenue. Now, they take less revenue, but their taxpayers also pay less. So you can't shift, you can't, so when you say spread it statewide, what you're spreading is the loss of revenue to the district statewide. You're not spreading the tax burden statewide. And that's sort of the issue. Now, the only other thing is we're not talking about a huge amount of money here.
Mm.
The most Heppner, the most is $55,000. And that's restoring them to where they would have been under 47, which is about a 15% gain in revenue to them, above what they would have got under Measure 5 if nothing had happened at all. So I think there's an issue there as to how much you restored back to them.
Well, the county by intergovernmental agreement could pick up a couple of services for the city and take care of it.
Yeah, that's another way to do it.
Jim, while you're over there, can you diagram the Gresham situation for us? And then Senator Leonard has some amendments, and we've got half an hour to look at the issue.
And Mr. Chair, if I could also, I see a contingent from Gresham, including the mayor, the police chief, and the fire chief. Okay. And I think somebody from finance.
Yeah. Why don't we have Jim diagram it first, and then we can... You can take the rest of the time, Senator Leonard, and instruct us as you will.
Okay.
Right. This is a different situation, and that this is really a 47 problem. And here's a crude example. The 95-96, which is the base year for Measure 47, there was trying to figure out the sort of right place to draw this. The tax levies in the Gresham code area might be sort of laid out like this. These are the other districts, the school and the county and the rest. Might be the line out of proportion, perhaps. Let's draw this up a little bit higher. Here's a city tax base, and this is a serial levy that expired. This is the base year for Measure 5, or for Measure 50, and for 47. So, for the taxpayers within this code area, they get a 10% reduction from the taxes that were there in 95-96. And that's the taxes that they pay out in this code area in 97-98. That's the taxes they would pay. Now, because the city had a serial levy in 95-96 and didn't have it out over here, and these set of code areas had a relatively high base compared to other code areas, say in the rest of the county or wherever. So, in effect, that benefits the districts that are in these code areas. And if you go out here to 97, 98, that benefit ends up being shared proportionally. So let's maybe draw it there. So then here is all the other districts. Here's the city without the serial levy.
That's within that code area, other districts within the code area, or Multnomah County?
Yeah, other districts within the code area, which would include Multnomah County, the portion of Multnomah County that's
in that area.
Because the way 47 works is on a property-by-property basis, and so all of the, so we show that by showing code areas, because you're talking about the total taxes that are imposed. Well, for every taxpayer, they're paying 10% less than 95, 96, but then under 47, we were distributing back to the taxing districts this permitted tax in proportion to the levies. Well, the city, because this serial levy had expired, has a lower share of the total taxes in the code area in 97, 98. So, although this has a high, you have a high base year here, what happens in effect is that the city gets some benefit out of the fact that this is a high base year, but they in effect share it with the other districts, because the other districts get benefit from that too that existed in 97.
So really, this doesn't change the base year at all.
It doesn't change the base year.
I mean, in other words, one of the concerns is whether the voters approved a bond, a base to replace the levy or not is irrelevant.
Well, I don't know whether that's irrelevant.
From the base year.
Yeah, it doesn't change the base year, whether
right.
they approve that or not.
Right.
It has a levy in the base year that made that a relatively high base year that does produce higher Measure 47 taxes in these codes than otherwise would occur. But what happens is that benefit, in effect, is shared by all the city and the other districts.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is it doesn't save a taxpayer in that taxing district within Gresham any money. We're just trying to divide up what